Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. We are here. It is Monday, January 8th, 2018. We have to talk about the wild card games after a very interesting weekend. A couple of good games, one really weird low-scoring game, and a couple of upsets here and there. Joining me to do that, friend of the show, longtime contributor, Mina Kimes of ESPN. Mina, what's up?
Bow. Hello, I'm back.
Is that your new your new sign-on of the ESPN?
That's my sound effect. I feel like last time I returned, I didn't play up the drama enough. So as you're introducing me, I was, you know, what I had in my mind is like when you're at a wedding and they make the brides and the bridesmaids do something coming in, which is my worst nightmare that I'll be asked to do that. Like, you know, like a little dance or like, anyways, I was envisioning myself emerging through the door, but just by myself and trying to think of the verbal fonting equivalent of a awkward dance.
Wait, so you didn't do that at your own wedding?
No. I was just, I'm a bridesmaid in a wedding in May. And I don't think this bride is going to go that route though. Have you ever had to do that?
No, I have never fortunately been asked to dance as a groomsman. I don't know that I would be okay with it. I feel like that's asking a lot of me.
I always love the one bridesmaid or groomsman who's clearly not down. And when they walk in, you can tell they're just openly resenting the bride and groom for having to partake in this concept. But
that's me. That's our, me every wedding. Yeah. I don't know how we're catching this to football. Every podcast.
But I'm back and
excuse me, I didn't mean to step on your intro. Just stretching into 2 minutes at this point.
I enjoyed all these games. Is that crazy?
No, it was good. They were all interesting in different ways. I don't know if I would say good, but they were interesting. There were stories to be told about all four games. So let's get to each of them. Let's go chronologically, and let's start with Tennessee and Kansas City, the upset, I would say, of the weekend. Tennessee, the weakest team by some measures heading into this year's postseason, went down 21-3. We were all laughing at them, and then they came back and beat the Chiefs, who are suddenly a franchise in major transition. And a lot of stories coming out of this game. I guess the biggest one in some ways would be the refereeing of Jeff Triplett. So what was that like for you to see Jeff Triplett refereeing a playoff game?
Yeah, I think the NFL really lucked out in having Marcus Mariota go beast mode like he did in the second half, because otherwise we would be talking much more about the impact that Triplett's officiating crew had on this game.
I mean, realistically, though, I hate being the person who's like, oh, this one call decided the game, because there's so many different things that go into winning and losing a game, and everyone's strategy would have been different. But realistically, I mean, he called a unprecedented, certainly I've never seen this called before, he called forward progress had been stopped on a Marcus Mariota sack, which ended up being a strip sack, which might have even been a touchdown going the other way, because on a play where Mariota never moved forward, he was moving backwards and was sacked going backwards, and ended up turning into a field goal for Tennessee. So at least a 3-point swing, possibly a 9 or 10 point swing. It did make the difference in a 22-21 game.
Yeah, absolutely. My personal favorite was when he said the touchdown was okay because he was in shotgun. I mean, there were at least 5 or 6 dramatic, well, they're not blown calls. Like the Derrick Henry thing, it wasn't blown. They got it right, but, you know, it was a mistake in the first place.
The weird thing.
Yeah. Sorry.
The weird part about all this is that this isn't Jeff Triplett's crew. This is a crew of random officials mixed up with Jeff Triplett. So do you think that he just drags down the referee crew he's with, or is it just that they just decided to, you know, we're just going to put the worst officials we have on one crew and see what happens?
I don't know how responsibilities are divvied up. I will not rule out the possibility of a Jeff Triplett contagion effect. But I will say it didn't ruin the game for me. I mean, I thought it was a really interesting game. You know, from the Chiefs side, I don't know if you agree with this. Yeah, obviously the narrative after the game was the play calling and why did Kareem Hunt go MIA and what were they thinking, which is relevant to today's news about Matt Nagy, I think. But to me, I thought that was a little bit overblown because they were just not on the field. I mean, the defense was terrible, terrible the second half.
Right. I mean, this game turned in the second half, and it turned on third down. Tennessee was, I believe, 7 of 9 on third down. The Chiefs were, they're 3-11 in first, or they had, I think, one conversion on first down. Oh, no, sorry. Tennessee was 1 of 5 in the first half, and then in the second half, they were 7 of 8. And the Chiefs, that tells you everything you need to know. The Chiefs were 3 of 6 in the first half. In the second half, they were 1 for 5 on third down. And there's a lot of short third downs the Chiefs were getting stuffed on. So, you know, this defense, which we knew was a problem, we knew that it was an issue, it got gashed. It was run over with Derrick Henry. They could not stop Tennessee on third down when they needed to. Marcus Mariota came up with the scrambles when it needed to. He found open receivers. There was some questionable effort from Darrell Revis on some of these plays.
I saw that. I know exactly the play you're thinking about. It was
there's more than one.
It was a goal line run, right?
There's a bunch of them.
Yeah.
I
don't know.
Right. And I mean, like, this was a game where, you know, if some of the breaks go Kansas City's way, they do end up winning this game, but it doesn't change what happened. Even if they had won by 2 points instead of losing by 2 points, I mean, this was a game they had in hand and should have comfortably won and blew. I mean, it could have gone differently, but even if they won by 2 points, it still would have been an ugly performance in the second half from a team that realistically should beat Tennessee most times.
Well, so what do you think about the play calling? Because, okay, so like I was saying earlier, Matt Nagy, it's announced today, he's hired as the head coach of Chicago, and play calling was handed to him, I want to say the last, like, third of the season or something, sure. Right? It was at the end of the losing streak. Mm-hmm. Andy Reid gave, I believe he called the plays in this game, unless Andy Reid overrode him or something. So that said, you know, people have been very critical of it today. I think not just the lack of Kareem Hunt, which was dramatic. And during their losing streak, obviously this is wrapped up in playing from behind, although clearly not in this case. Kareem Hunt barely carried the ball, and then he barely carried the ball in this game. Also, the other thing I think that jumped out at me was Alex Smith stopped throwing it deep after halftime. So how much of that do you pin on Nagy? How much of it do you pin on the players?
It's a bit of both, right? I mean, I don't understand the arguments that, oh, it's Andy Reid's blowing another playoff game when, by all accounts, even though he's doing the install during the week, even though he's, you know, setting some elements of the game plan, it is Matt Nagy play calling. There's been no reports to this point that Matt Nagy was not the one actually putting, you know, making decisions on the headset. Andy Reid probably has a play sheet, but it doesn't change the fact that Nagy was the one actually making the snap-to-snap play call. So you can't blame Reid for that element of it, even though I think it's easy to, given his playoff history. I don't follow them too much for the play calling, just because I don't think... You look at Tennessee, their run defense is their strength. That's what they do very well. And it's not as if when they were giving Kareem Hunt the football, he was gashing them. He had 42 yards and 11 carries, which is fine. You know, it's not unreasonable. And maybe you say, okay, give him a couple more carries here or there. I mean, I could certainly understand that. But, I mean, this was a team where you have Alex Smith being stopped on a speed option on 3rd and 1. Like, that's what they did during the season, and it worked. So, you know, when you're going to stick with that, and then it doesn't work against this team in the playoffs, well, that's the reality. You should probably be throwing the football more. That is the weakness of this Tennessee defense. So I don't fault them for that. I wonder if, in terms of them throwing deep, you know, Tyreek Hill pretty much disappeared after halftime, and I wonder how much of it was losing Travis Kelce, where, you know, if you don't have Kelce up the seam, then suddenly you can play... You know, you can play too deep against the, you can play too deep against the Chiefs and not have to worry about Kelce going up the seam and splitting your safeties. And we saw early in this game, they went with a lot of man coverage. They tried to put Jonathan Cyprian. They tried to put, who else did they have on him? They had Avery Williamson on him for the touchdown. They were trying to go with linebackers and safeties against Kelce, and it was not working at all. He was abusing their defensive man coverage. Then they switched the zone. And they were able to get away with it because Kelce wasn't really a mismatch for them over the middle of the field. And so I do think at some point, you know, injuries are a problem here. The play calling was a problem. Alex Smith didn't necessarily play his best football. I mean, he did have a few drops here or there, but you think about that fourth down play. I mean, his receiver was open, and Alex Smith, he overthrew him by a yard. I mean, that is a pass that I think he would want to take back and think, I could probably hit this pass most times.
Yeah, I think the Kelce thing can't be overstated. Who, mm-hmm. you know, he had 66 yards before he went out. But it reminds me, you talked a little bit about some of the coverage challenges they had facing him in the first half playing man. And it's like Gronk, right, where mm-hmm. you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't, in trying right. to defend him. And if in the same way, where when Gronk's not playing, defenses are actually able to play the defense they want to play against mm-hmm. the Patriots. I think you see that with Kansas City. And I don't know why. I guess when he went out, it didn't seem like the end of the world. But when you kind of think about the weapons they have, you think about Tyreek Hill, who had a few drops early in the game as well, and that offense, it suddenly you realize how integral he is to it and how dramatic it is. I think the running thing, Bill, was a little bit exacerbated or the contrast, I guess, with Tennessee, which did stay so committed to the run, is maybe what also made people kind of hone in on that with Derrick Henry and, you know, who was struggling in the first half, as I recall, and then really started, he got going in the second half. He looked, I thought, very good, and I'm not bitter at all as a Derrick Henry fantasy owner who did not benefit from such good performances in the last half of the season. But anyways, he looked very good, and I guess if I had any hope for the Titans going forward, it would be based on how he performed and how the offense looked when he was performing that way.
That's the thing, right? I mean, if you look at Tennessee over the season, it's not an inspiring offense. It's not an inspiring team in general. They kind of limped to 9-7 with, you know, a defense that's mediocre, good against the run, but 24th in DVOA against the pass. They played the easiest schedule in football or on defense, and one of the easiest schedules by any measure across the entire team. So, you know, you're not that thrilled about them, but the one thing you might say is, well, they're a different offense with Derrick Henry on the field as opposed to DeMarco Murray, both as a runner and as a passer. They've been much more efficient with Henry on the field as a runner. And then their passing game, I put the numbers in my column today, they had Marcus Mariota had a 105.3 passer rating with Derrick Henry on the field and a 65.1 passer rating with DeMarco Murray on the field. And of course, you know, some of that is just stuff that has nothing to do with the running backs, but I do think teams are more worried about stopping Derrick Henry when he's in the backfield. And so that does open up some stuff in the play action game. It does sort of create some bigger plays when he's running the football. And I think this is going to be a better offense with him on the field the rest of the way. I just don't think that DeMarco Murray was offering much to this team at all.
Yeah, and obviously their only chance of beating New England or covering, let's call it what it is if they stay on the field, right? And New England's defense is not good. Simply not, the run defense is not good. So if the Titans are able to just kind of string together a few long drives with Henry, with Mariota using his legs, I could see them staying in it, at least, certainly narrowing the gap a bit. I have to ask, do you think Marcus Mariota regretted playing so well because it saved Mike Mularkey's job?
If you're a Titans fan, you have to be torn right now, right? I mean, I will say, if you're apparently ownership, then you supported Mike Mularkey all along. There was never any reason to be worried about his future, and they just happened to release this the moment after they won a playoff game. Very fortuitous timing on their part. But it does seem strange. And I think that Marcus Mariota is better with a new offensive coordinator and or a new head coach. So yes, I do think he's probably a little upset. But what I will say is that it seems so haphazard for an owner to sit there and say, well, you know, in a game where Marcus Mariota literally threw a touchdown pass to himself, where we benefited from a missed field goal, from a bunch of questionable calls, you know, that our entire opinion on Mike Mularkey has changed. And given that we were basically set to fire him if he was going to lose this game, and now we see him as our head coach of the future, maybe might even give him extension for all we know, heading into next season. It seems like there's no real plan here. There is that quote, I think it's a Seth Wickersham quote from someone, that the NFL is a bunch of teams being run like their lemonade stands. And that's what it feels like here in Tennessee with the Mularkey decision.
Yeah, especially this game. So, you know, the famous, I don't know how to describe it, the Marshawn Lynch Madden video where he put the team on his back, you know, of course. And I'm assuming all of our listeners are aware of this cultural reference, but I was thinking about that watching Marcus Mariota, because sometimes I was like, man, he is putting the team on his back. And then I heard it in the voice, and I imagined that guy who narrated that video doing it for Marcus Mariota. Because, like, what better of a game to illustrate the coach having absolutely nothing to do with the success of the team? I mean, everything he did in that game was so, I mean, it was so crazy, from the touchdown to the block, which I have to say might be the best quarterback block I've ever seen. Is that hyperbolic?
There was one a couple weeks ago where I was like, this is a real block. I'm sick of these fake blocks from quarterbacks. I get a very, like, very sports radio take on Twitter, but it's definitely up there. And it was legit, like, it's a legitimate, like, you know, improvised, this is me finding work. My favorite quote for the 2018 season, finding work. He found work when he didn't need to. It would have been very easy for him to just stand aside and it would have blown up the play, but he actually made a meaningful block and actually changed his team's win expectancy.
Yeah, well, Russell Wilson's always doing these kind of, like, slightly ineffectual and they crack me up. And that's most quarterback. Alex Smith has had a few pretty funny ones this season, but Mariota, like, dropped his shoulder and leaned into it, and that was just absolutely crazy. As I just said earlier, I don't think they have a chance. I do think the defense is a little underrated. The Titans defense, speaking of. You know, I was really blown away by, what's his name, Jarrell Casey in this game. He's like the ultimate you forget about defensive star, right? Like, I mean, that's every Titan, to be fair. But just not just at, you know, stopping the pass or rushing the passer, but also defending the run. He is really good. And I think that could really help against Brady.
Yeah. And the Chiefs didn't really have an answer for him all game, it felt like. You know, they were not effective really running the ball at all in this game. I mean, here or there, they had a couple plays that were nice, but it was really an impressive performance from the Tennessee front seven in the second half to just shut down this Chiefs offense. So it is going to be a transition period for the Chiefs. You figure Alex Smith is going to get traded. They're going to cut Tamba Ali. They could cut Derek Johnson, given his cap hit and their cap situation. Yeah. And they lost Brad Childress to retirement, who was their spread game analyst, I believe was the last title he might have had. But then they lost Matt Nagy to the Bears today, who's going to be their new head coach, which I think is a really it's the most obvious hire so far this season from a team trying to capture Sean McVay in a bottle.
And certainly, I think, taking advantage of Mitch Trubisky's skill sets. I like it a lot, honestly. Because that's really the only thing the Bears need to do right now, right, is develop Mitch Trubisky. To have a creative offensive coordinator who is willing to use college principles and do interesting things and take advantage of a quarterback's mobility, I think is probably the best possible choice they could have made.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I have absolutely no idea if he's going to be good or not, I have to admit.
Yeah, so,
But I mean, that seems logical to me. But who knows? We'll see. We'll see if Mitch Trubisky is going to be any good. Of course, a lot to happen there in Chicago. Let's move on, though. Let's talk about the night game. Another upset. Speaking of Sean McVay, his Rams were pushed aside, really outplayed start to finish by the Atlanta Falcons. And it wasn't just how the Rams, it wasn't just the Rams, it was how the Rams lost. I messed up my own cliche there. They fumbled away two special teams plays. They had some of the best special teams in all of football this season, but Farrah Cooper had two fumbles, setting up the Falcons on short drives. Todd Gurley, effective running the football, 14 carries for 101 yards, but his 10 targets in this game captured 10 yards. The Rams were, you have something you want to say, it sounds like.
No, I was just burping.
Excuse me. Again, I appreciate that we get the actual Mina Kimes. We don't get
edit it out. Keep it in. The people need to know.
We don't get the first take Mina Kimes here. We got the real deal, Mina Kimes.
You're getting the real stuff. The unfiltered, behind the scenes, the authentic burping.
The Rams in this game. So the Rams this year had the most yards after catch of anybody in the league by a significant margin. Fifth most since 2000, or since over the last 10 years. Fifth most over the last 10 years in terms of yards after catch. 6.6. The Falcons held them to 2.6 yards after catch. One of the best games of any team all season. So this was a great tackling game from the Falcons. It was a great a game where they benefited from some luck in terms of fumbles. But I thought overall, a performance that reminded me a lot of the Falcons defense from last postseason. And if that defense is going to show up, this team is kind of scary suddenly.
Yeah. So the yards after catch stat, which is crazy, it really stands out to me. You mentioned the tackling, because I was thinking about the, I went to the Rams Seahawks games earlier this year, which the Seattle won in Los Angeles, and it reminded me a lot of this game in some ways, especially the performance on defense in terms of containing Gurley, especially on passes, just the disciplined tackling that we saw. I mean, I think the Seahawks defense, Falcons defense thing is a little bit overblown. I know the Dan Quinn connection, but that was something that really jumped out at me. The other thing that jumped out at me about the Falcons defense, which I was extraordinarily impressed by and I think really underrated going into this game, was I was watching them on this field, on the field this weekend, and I was thinking about the Super Bowl. So there was a point halfway, I think it was at least in the beginning of the third quarter or something during the Super Bowl, when I looked at the time of possession and I realized how long the Falcons defense had been on the field, and that's when I realized they were going to lose. they were so ahead by a couple touchdowns at least, but because they played so fast and physical, you know, in that first half, and because of the way the game script shook out with some of the turnovers, they were just on the field too much, Bill. So this game was the reverse, where they weren't on the field a lot. Actually, you know, just Atlanta was able to string together some really strong drives, and when I kind of noticed that, I was like, oh, they're gonna keep this up. They're gonna hold them down, and I think that, you know, they just played it out perfectly. Like, you couldn't design a more perfect game script to beat Los Angeles. So the question is, is this defense going to look like this through the rest of the playoffs?
Can I make a request for the future, though? if we're in the Super Bowl again and you see that a team is down by two touchdowns and you know they're going to lose, or they're going to come back and win, can you tell me so I can get some bets down in real time how that's happening? Because that would be very helpful for me.
I might be over-dramatizing. I knew they were going to win, but I knew they would be in trouble.
Yes, I agree with you there. I think that's very fair. And you're right. I mean, in this game, the Rams, I mean, they were shut down the entire first quarter of this game. 2 3-and-outs, 1 first down on 4 drives. Third quarter, they had 1 drive with 1 first down the entire game. So the Falcons' defense had some breaks. It wasn't like, you know, they had to play 80 or 90 snaps, whatever the crazy total was in the Super Bowl. They only played... How many snaps did they play in this game? They had a... I should know where this is. 64.
I don't even think they were on the field in the third quarter. I mean, maybe a little bit, but, you know, those 2 drives by... Yeah, sorry.
They were on the field for 1:34 in the first quarter. The Falcons had a 16-play drive to start and then a 10-play drive immediately afterwards. They only got field goals. It wasn't like the Falcons' offense was great in this game, but... They were able to
stay on the field.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They stayed on the field. They kept the Rams offense on the sidelines, and the defense, you know, held up. They didn't allow too many big plays. And the Rams had a very nice drive or two where they did actually, you know, create some stuff downfield. There were a couple of just absolute dimes from Jared Goff, to create some big plays. But I mean, this was a team that kept the Rams, you know, from making most of those big plays, tackled, and then held up on third down and got off the field. And, you know, you're going to win a lot of games if you can do that, whether it's the Rams offense, whether it's the Eagles, whether it's anybody. I mean, if you can, you know, hold the ball on offense, which the Falcons have done very impressively all season, they've been the best third down offense in all of football this year. And then your defense can, you know, eliminate the big plays, force a team to, you know, slowly matriculate down the field and then come up with a stop here or there. Like, you're going to be in great shape. So to me, I mean, if the Falcons can keep this up, which is not out of the question, you know, they are favored against the Eagles. This could be a team that goes on a similar run to the one we saw a year ago.
Yeah, I think the offense, I'm about to say some words that I'm going to regret as soon as they come out of my mouth. Getting hot at the right time is a real thing that could happen. Because, you know, the question with this Falcons offense all season was, you know, what happened? Like, why are they not as good? Well, very few offenses in NFL history have been as good as the Falcons offense was last season. Right. Like, of course they were not going to be as good. Of course they weren't going to be as healthy. Of course, you know, they weren't going to be the best offense in the last whatever. And they were still pretty good. But there have been, like, just a few pieces missing, I think, with them. You know, obviously the red zone, the Julio Jones-Matt Ryan connection has come and gone over the last few, and man, was it back. This game, he was 9 of 10 targeting him, I'm saying right now. So, which actually was interesting because the way they were using Julio, it wasn't like he was, I think, connecting with him. I don't have this in front of me, but mostly on pretty short passes, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Getting crazy yak. So, anyways, if the defense looks like they did in this game and the offense improves or at least plays at the level, I don't see why they can't make a pretty deep run given how easy their path is.
Right. And they could be playing Nick Foles and Case Keenum entirely plausibly on the road, granted, but still, like, Nick Foles and Case Keenum with a shot to make the Super Bowl. And I mean, for the offense, like, it wasn't as if this was a game where Matt Ryan had all day to throw and they were just, you know, in great situations, all that. He was running for his life on most plays. This was a game where Aaron Donald was the best player in football, let alone the best player on the field. He was an absolute monster in this game. So, I mean, the fact that they were able to move the ball efficiently and effectively, they were able to put piece together those long drives when and kind of tire out that Rams defensive front went a long way. But I mean, you know, to your point, like, this is still a pretty good offense. It's not what we saw a year ago when the Falcons were, I believe, the best first down offense in the history of the National Football League. This year, they're just the best first down offense in the NFL this season, which is still good. I mean, that's still, yeah, you could win a lot of games with that. So, I think they're in great shape. Now, granted, they could lose by 30 points next week in Philadelphia. They're going to play Fletcher Cox, who is, if not Aaron Donald, a really good impersonation of Aaron Donald. They got two long field goals from Matt Bryant in this game, where I don't want to have to rely on Matt Bryant hitting 50 plus yard field goals for, you know, twice a week in Philadelphia, next week. But I think the running game could be better next week against the Eagles. I think that they could be, you know, they could be a team where they're going to be flying around the field, and they have the athletes to compete on the interior against Zach Ertz and against Nelson Aguilar, who you figure Nick Foles is going to be relying upon. So I think they were a really tough matchup for the Eagles. And, you know, if they make it to the NFC championship game, the Vikings are a really good team. The Saints are a really good team, but Falcons are going to be in play for sure.
Falcons Saints NFC championship would be so fun.
Right?
What a great rivalry. I mean, that would just be awesome. Yeah. My only concern about them is the line. We've got Ben Garland standing in for Andy Levitre. I don't know if Levitre, right? That's how you say
his
name?
Yeah, you got it.
Who's out? You know, I mentioned earlier, obviously, they benefited so much from the health and consistency of that offensive line last season. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you talked a little about Aaron Donald getting that interior pressure. Again, yeah, that's something you could see from the Eagles or from, I think, the Saints and the Vikings as well. So that would be something I would look for. But yeah, I don't know. They look pretty good to me. Oh, I love that Alex Mack touchdown so much. Speaking of the offensive line, it's so cute.
It's the best play in football. I don't know why more teams
just don't
hand the ball to a running back and then just have three offensive linemen push him forward for extra yards. Instead of having guys block in front of you, have them block behind you. This is my,
like, a little sled.
Yeah, this is my galaxy brain idea for football.
Galaxy brain idea. It was like, it reminded me, like, when Hodor carries Bran on from Game of Thrones. Yeah. That was the reference that came to my mind. We just need Alex Mack to
Alex Mack
carries Devonta Freeman. It was so cute. It's like when Gronkowski, was it Deion Lewis or James White, he dragged into the end zone that one time.
Yes.
I don't know why they don't do this more often. It's my favorite play.
It's the best play. Does this loss change the way you feel about the Rams at all?
I think that this is like getting hot at the right time, but the reverse. I do, they, especially how they started the game. You know, I blew off all the experience and should they have taken the bye off and all that stuff. And I stand by that. But they did look a little unprepared, maybe, in the first quarter. I think that's fair to say. But that obviously doesn't change the way I feel about them at all. I thought Jared Goff was good. You know, he definitely struggles when you take away Gurley as an outlet. He definitely struggles at times, but he still made some really, really nice passes. So it doesn't really. I think they're still the best team in the NFC West right now.
Do you want to be set up for an unfair answer to a question I'm going to ask you?
Is it about Todd Gurley?
No, it's about it's about teams who rest their players in Week 17.
Oh, gosh. I just said I know it's not true. I regretted saying it. They did just look so flat coming out.
They did,
again,
for sure.
Like, that's, it's not, yeah, but here, what's the stat?
So I went back and looked over the past about 8 years or so to teams who have rested their stars during week 17, either on a part-time basis or a halftime basis. It's a bunch of Super Bowl winners is the problem.
Sure.
Patriots in 2014, Ravens in 2012, who else? Get it. I mean, there's some teams
experienced
who have
teams, though. Experienced. That's the only reason I'm even giving this credence is just comparing, you know, the first-time coach, 23-year-old quarterback. That's all. Working that into it. New theory. That's
an interesting comparison. I did not consider. I will say I did not consider that. So I will say there are the 2010 Jets who benchmarked Sanchez and went to the AFC Championship game. I don't want to compare Jared Goff to Mark Sanchez for a lot of reasons. But yeah, I mean, you get what I'm saying, which is that I think we have evidence in both ways for it being something that helps and hurts. And I think at the end of the day, they came out flat, but I think they could have come out flat even if they had played their guys in week 17. And we're sitting here and saying, well, why did they play their guys in week 17? Why did they, play them in a meaningless game in week 17 just to try and get Todd Gurley the MVP? They're tired. I mean, I think we should give credit to the Falcons defense more than the Rams offense for struggling in this game.
100%. And I have had to eat so much crow on the Falcons defense because, it's kind of the same as last season too, which is just the statistical improvement they'd showed towards the final 5 to 6 weeks was extraordinary, especially at stopping the run. And they got playmakers, man. They've got some of the best defense players in the playoffs right now. So they're definitely a team to be concerned about.
Well, we have something to be concerned about if we don't go to break. We're going to come back with more Bill Warnwell Show here in a moment. But first, last week, guys, I talked about the possibility of the Jaguars and Bills being a hot ticket here during the SeatGeek advertisement that I am recording at this very moment. And wouldn't you know, crowd was hopping in Jacksonville with a lot of people who bought tickets from our partners at SeatGeek. So if you're on the Jagwagon, if you're a fan of the Jaguars who is going to go on the road to see them vanquish the Pittsburgh Steelers or heading to any of the other NFL playoff games this weekend, you of course know there's only one place you should be buying your tickets, and that is with our partners at SeatGeek. Because, as you already know, but just to remind you, just in case you haven't purchased tickets with SeatGeek already, first off, you're just a fool, and I'm sorry that you're living that existence, but we're going to fix it for you. SeatGeek makes ticket buying easy. I can't make it any clearer than that. You don't know what a good deal is if you're traveling to go see some team play. You haven't bought tickets there before. SeatGeek takes care of that problem for you because they aggregate tickets from all over the web, and then they use their proprietary deal score technology to rate those tickets. So you know you're not getting ripped off. You're not going to pay a ton of money for a ticket that isn't very good. SeatGeek's already done the work for you. And even better, there are tickets in all different price ranges, so you can get any kind of seats you want. The tickets are fully guaranteed, so you're not going to get to the game and have fake tickets for a game that you can't attend. I can't imagine if you're a Jaguars fan, you want to hang outside the stadium and watch Pittsburgh play. It doesn't sound like very much fun to me. That is not going to happen with SeatGeek. SeatGeek will take care of you. And even better, they can take care of you and give you $20 along the way, because if you use my promo code, which is Barnwell, you'll get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Do that. Just download the SeatGeek app, enter my promo code, my last name, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L, Barnwell, and you'll get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. So go to SeatGeek, download the app, buy some tickets, check out football. God knows the NFL would appreciate it if you did. And use SeatGeek to save $20 off your first purchase today. Welcome back to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. Again, it's Monday, January 8th. Not sure I'm giving you the date for the second half of the show. You probably already know it from the first half. And honestly, you shouldn't be getting your date information from this show anyway. But still have Mina Kimes here. We're still talking about Wildcard Weekend, and we're getting to the Sunday games now, which means, hope you guys are ready. We are ready to discuss Bill's Jags, a game that was compelling in its own strange way. Certainly a defensive struggle, a game where both Blake Bortles and Tyrod Taylor were struggling to throw the football around, in what were, according to Tony Romo, the worst weather conditions any quarterback has ever played in Jacksonville, because it was kind of windy, I guess.
The thin veneer of disdain, or no, it was a veneer, it's a veneer of tolerance in Tony Romo's voice every time he talked about Blake Bortles was something to behold. He was so disgusted, clearly disgusted, especially during the first half, by what he was seeing. It felt like he was a little bit less angry at the Bills entire. I mean, it really felt like he wanted to go on the field and punch Blake Bortles in the face.
To be fair, I'm not saying that you insert Tony Romo into the lineup in week one and he has all season to learn the playbook. Like, I'm saying just straight up at halftime, Tony Romo puts on pads, doesn't know the plays, goes into the huddle and is like, hey, we're going to do this from now on. Like, don't you think that he improves both teams and especially the Jaguars' chances of winning this game?
Yes, I 100%. Let's not even stop there. He'd probably be, well, we'll have to see how Nick Foles looks, but could not believe how bad Blake Bortles was. Because, okay, so with the Bills, and we can talk about that, and I'm not making excuses for Tyrod Taylor, so please get out of my mentions. He was bad, but the receivers were terrible, too. The play calling, like, that was a failure all around, yeah. I felt. You know, Blake Bortles was throwing it to ghosts. I mean, I could not believe how inaccurate he looked, Bill. That is the worst I've ever seen him, too. Because, you know, so we've talked a lot about this season. He's improved. He genuinely improved over the last second half of the season. He looked decent. He looked worse in this game than I think I've ever seen him look in his entire career.
Really? I cannot abide with that. I will say he did not have, like, the wind-up mechanic thing happening.
That's true.
So that was bad. Yeah. But, I mean, it looked like not only did he have no confidence as a passer, but it looked like the Jaguars had no confidence in him as a passer. You can see from the play calling. This was a game where Romo kept saying how the Bills were selling out against the run. Their linebackers were just crowding the line of scrimmage. They were putting a safety in the box and crashing the line of scrimmage. And it's not hard to beat that if you're a competent quarterback. You go with play action, you roll out, you attack them up the seam, you get to your tight end, you throw dig routes, and it was clear after the first few minutes of this game that the Jaguars had no intention of ever changing that scheme because they did not trust Bortles to make those throws. And, I mean, when he had open receivers, which he had at points in this game on mesh and crossing routes and, you know, on screens, like, they were either incomplete because he was throwing them poorly. He wasn't recognizing guys coming open. He was throwing the ball and putting it in places where his receivers had to make catches that prevented them from moving forward, from getting 80 yards after catch. I mean, the whole thing was just the Jaguars trying to win despite their quarterback, which is kind of staggering given that Blake Bortles from week, 13 to 15 was the best quarterback in football. He had a 128.6 passer rating. And over the last three games, 62.3 passer rating. He looks like a fundamentally different quarterback. And maybe if you're a Jags fan, you're sitting here and saying, you know, hey, he was great for 3 weeks and terrible for 3 weeks, so why should we count that he's going to be the same guy next week? But it has to be disheartening because you figure right as you saw he was improving, he's now playing at least quantitatively as bad as he has at any point in recent memory.
And I don't know what his passer rating was in this game off the top of my head, but whatever it is, use this to show why passer rating is misleading. Because he threw at least two, maybe three passes that should have been picked, right? You know, and that was probably the difference in this game was the interception luck in some ways. It's a shame, Bill, because the way he was playing for it was at least the whole month of December, right? In late November. They could have won the Super Bowl. I really believe that because I believe that defense is that good. I tweeted after the game something about, you know, Bill's offense was bad, but like, let's remember this Jacksonville defense is really special and a pass defense. I even narrowed it and immediately got 100. Why are you defending Tyrod Taylor? In my mentions, but also people saying, no, they're not, like, they suck. I'm sorry. The Jacksonville pass defense is incredible. Those cornerbacks are the best cornerback duo in the NFL. Clay Campbell was a monster.
He was so good.
I mean, they're so good. So with Bortles playing, let's say he improves a little bit.
Okay.
Do you think this defense is good enough to give them a shot?
Sure. I mean, you know, when he improved, are you saying the Super Bowl or next week?
No, next week.
Yeah, because I don't think he's that much better than the guy he was the first time, or that much worse than the guy the first time these two teams played. Remember, you know what his stats were?
Yeah.
When they played in, what was it, week 5 or week 6 or whatever? Week 5. You know what he did against the Steelers? He was 8 of 14 for 95 yards with an interception.
Good God.
Like, I mean, like, and they won that game by 21 points. Like, he doesn't have to be that good. He just has to not actively ruin their offense. He just has to at least give give their safeties something to think about once in a while to scare them even a tiny bit from crashing the line of scrimmage and going after Leonard Fournette. If you can just do that, the defense is so good and the running game is competent enough that they should be able to at least compete with Pittsburgh, if not necessarily even win outright. I mean, it is, they are asking so little of Blake Bortles, and yet they are getting even less. And it felt like, you know, Bortles' ability to run, which was presented as like this, you know, game-saving move the Jaguars made, it wasn't really like a thing they did on purpose. There were, you know, a couple of read option plays here or there, and those do help, of course. And I think that they do deserve credit as the game went along for realizing that they could kind of make some hay with Bortles as a runner. But, I mean, his biggest runs were scrambles because nobody was open and because he wasn't finding any open receivers. They were plays where he dropped the football before a handoff and then had to scramble away from it. I mean, it was infuriatingly frustrating if you're a Bills fan, and just, I'm frustrated for Jags fans too, because they deserve better. This is such a good team and has so much going for it that it is really frustrating they did not get a better quarterback than Blake Bortles, you know, that they were so close to cutting him or moving on from him in August.
Well, in some ways it's a blessing in disguise, because the way he was playing in November, December, I think it raised some questions, right, about what are they going to do with him. It's such a small sample size of him being decent. But, you know, there was, I think, a sense that if he maintained that level of play through the playoffs, they kind of had to hold on to him. And I think that question has been answered. So at least they have clarity. I don't know how comforting that is. And then on the other side, you know, I'm sure you agree. I'm pretty sure Taylor's done in Buffalo, yes. Right?
So what
do you think? Yeah. What is this new quarterback going to walk into, though? Like, boy, I don't know.
I mean,
I do not like that offense.
Right. And I think it's a question of, do they want to bring back Rick Dennison, who seemed to spend the entire year frustrated that the quarterback he had wasn't the quarterback who fit into his scheme. And a guy who, you know, with Tyrod Taylor, who talked about him at great length. You wrote an article about him for ESPN the magazine. I wouldn't say he was his best game by any means against the Jags, but was obviously playing against one of the best defenses in football and was not helped out by his receivers all that much. We saw what happened with Nathan Peterman when he played the Chargers earlier this year. Did not exactly inspire things late in this game. Came in 1-for-3 with a pick and also an intentional grounding as well. Really did not offer much hope for the future there.
Poor kid. Like,
yeah,
talk about being thrown in the worst, like, mismanaged. You know, we give Hugh Jackson a lot of grief. Like, how could they have mismanaged Nathan Peterman anymore this season?
Oh, no. What if the Browns get Nathan Peterman? That's just, I feel so bad for them. So many people involved. I mentioned this on Twitter. Given the circumstances, shouldn't the Bills just trade for Andy Dalton? Wouldn't that make everyone happy?
Yeah, he's probably the most beloved Buffalo athlete of the last 15 years. He's more along the lines of, I think, what Dennison wants. I don't know what they're going to do. I imagine they have enough assets to trade up.
They have two first round picks in a draft that's very very quarterback heavy. I mean, it's not crazy to imagine, you know, Baker Mayfield dropping to them in the draft, where I think that would be very fun if he's a Buffalo Bills quarterback. I could see that being a fun mix of coach, or not coach, of player and fan base.
I don't know about coach, though.
Yeah, coach is another question altogether. But at this point, this is what the Bills are. I mean, this is a team that has a very solid defense and had an offense that was a fundamental mismatch all season of their quarterback skills, of their running back skills to some extent, and the offense around them. So they have to figure out if they're going to make wholesale changes and try and change their personnel, which it seems like at least a quarterback they're going to do, or if they're going to sit there and swap out their offensive coordinator, maybe just change the quarterback and try and run this back with a very solid offensive line and what should be an effective running game, and maybe go out and sign a receiver in free agency and hope that that's going to be an improved offense there.
Yeah, and just one last note on Tyrod, because, you know, I do think he gets a chance to start next year. I don't think he's going to be a designated starter, probably unlikely. I mean, who knows how the quarterback situation is going to shake out. But, you know, I could see him in Denver.
Yeah.
Right, where Kubiak is involved, who we know is a fan of his from his Baltimore days, and tried to recruit him as a backup to Manning. He could be given the opportunity to compete there. it was disheartening to see in this game. A couple things really stood out. One, you know, he seems more hesitant. Forget the fact they don't have as many design runs. He just seems hesitant to take off. And his deep ball just really took a turn for the worse this season, which was, I felt, one of his best skills over the last 2 years. So it definitely feels like he needs a fresh start. And yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be really interesting to see if he ends up, for him, it's all about place and where he ends up. So we'll see how that shakes out.
Wouldn't it be a logical place for him to land? Wouldn't Jacksonville be that spot for him? And like, for what the Jags needed to win this game, Tyrod Taylor made so much more sense than Blake Bortles.
For sure. Yeah. That's another one. I'm so hesitant, Bill, about predicting where any of these guys are going to go because it's so, there's so many balls in the air right now with Cousins and Alex Smith and Eli. You know, Eli's staying, so that one's out. But I don't know. It's going to be. Didn't Gettleman come out and say he's the starter next season? I mean, for what that's worth, I don't know.
Right. Like, how much is that really worth to us at this point?
That's a good point.
Well, yeah, you can read about the NFL quarterback dominoes on ESPN.com. A very talented writer wrote a piece on December 21st analyzing that exact question. But, yeah, it's certainly a lot in the air still. And even if the Giants do keep Eli Manning, there's going to be options moving all around the league. It could be really crazy for the first time. Maybe for at least it could be the wildest quarterback market, probably since the offseason Peyton Manning was a free agent. So we'll see. Really, I'm intrigued to watch Jack Steelers because, you know, it was such a dominant defensive performance last time. You do figure the Steelers are going to be favorites. It's hard to imagine Blake Bortles doing much in that game, but I mean, the Jags defense is for real. And yeah. if it's their day, and it was their day earlier this year and it was their day, this weekend, like, they're going to shut down anyone they want.
Is Jalen Ramsey going to shadow Antonio Brown? Well, is Antonio Brown, he's playing, right? What's the latest on? Okay.
According to Antonio Brown, according to Chad Ochocinco's Twitter, looks like he is going to be playing. So,
that's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun matchup.
It's going to be great. Like, of all the teams I want to see the Jags play in this postseason, the Steelers are number one. So I think that's exactly what I wanted to see. All right, Mina, let's get to Saints-Panthers in a second. But first, Drew Brees has been playing for a long time. It's been around for about 27 years. And chances are, if you are a human being like me, you maybe have some underwear. It feels like it's been around for 27 years. Nobody needs that. You don't want that. People around you don't want that. You can do better in 2018. And one of the ways you can do better is by getting a MeUndies membership, which everyone I know, this is an absolute fact. I am not lying to you. I'm not just trying to sell this to you, including myself. Everyone I know who has tried MeUndies loves it. There is literally a 100% success rate I've seen with MeUndies. It is that comfortable. It is that life changing. And at this point, there's really no reason to wear any other underwear. You're going to look at it. Your whatever you have cast off from years past, you're going to look at it in your drawer and just think, God, I would rather go do laundry than wear this old janky underwear. That is what's going to happen with MeUndies. You are going to be so thrilled with the new underwear you have and you get every month with MeUndies that you're not going to want any other old underwear. MeUndies, of course, has a variety of different styles. They have bold, classic, and adventurous prints. You can, you know, just buy underwear a la carte, which I think is the word. I don't think it's a fancy word for a la carte underwear, but we'll say a la carte underwear. You can get a membership plan, and it's made out of a sustainably sourced, naturally soft fabric that is 3 times softer than cotton. Go feel something you have that's cotton, and then throw it in the garbage because you're getting something 3 times softer than that. Think about how great that would be on your skin. So much better than what you're wearing right now, unless you happen to be wearing MeUndies, in which case, maybe this ad is not for you, but maybe it is. I don't know. Maybe you want more. Maybe you deserve more. Maybe you should get more in 2018. And right now, MeUndies has an exclusive offer just for my listeners until January 20th, which is a short time away. So I would advise that you hop on this while you have the chance. If you place an order on MeUndies, you will get 20% off your membership and free shipping. That's 20% off an already discounted membership for the new year. And even better, They offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you order a pair and you don't like it, you will get a full refund. I don't know how to make that any easier. Think about how confident they must be. Get it once, you will like it, it'll give it back for free, but you're not going to have to. That is how good MeUndies is. So if you want to get a membership today, if you want to get 20% off your first purchase, go to MeUndies.com/Barnwell, my last name, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L, and get 20% off your membership and free shipping. Great deal. MeUndies.com/Barnwell. And I wanted to see the Saints advance, and I did see that. They beat Carolina.
Me too.
A much closer game than it was the first two times these two teams played. The Saints were not able to run the football. The Panthers sold out to stop their running game. And so what we saw was a sort of classic Saints game from the past few years where it wasn't really a great defensive performance. They were good for stretches, certainly, but it wasn't like they were dominant on defense. And we didn't see much of the running game. It was a game where Drew Brees really carried this offense to victory. 376 yards passing on 33 pass attempts, a bunch of plays downfield, including that 80-yard touchdown pass to Ted Ginn, which was such bad coverage that it even confused Matt Bowen afterwards, which is not. That's it's really hard to do that. But a bunch of blown coverages from the Panthers, and big game for Michael Thomas and Ted Ginn, and a big game for Drew Brees, where we've been talking all year about, well, now the Saints can win games with their running game and with their defense, which is a brand new thing for them. And we saw an example here of them winning a game with their passing attack as well.
Yeah, I have a great Ted Ginn stat. I was looking for it because...
Is it just how old Ted Ginn is?
That combined touchdown was 400 years old. He has zero drops on deep throws this year.
Really?
I think that was it. Yeah, or maybe passes over 20 yards.
Wow.
I forgot to paste it, but I might be completely making that up, but I'm pretty sure it's true. And yeah, I think it is. And obviously, given some of the drops the Panthers receivers had, or the lack of separation they were getting, it really stood out, the revenge game factor. But the Brees thing was just amazing, Bill. Like, as you were just saying, the whole season, he hasn't been the story of the Saints. And then we'll notice little things like, huh, Drew Brees just broke the NFL completion percentage record. Like, that seems crazy. And he did it while, you know, he didn't Bradford his way to it. He still threw it deep.
Oh, wow.
And then you watch this. Yeah, Bradford's a verb.
The biggest and then insult.
And then you watch this game, and it was the combination of his excellence, but also, I think, the previous games of the weekend, especially the morning. And you're like, oh, my God, right. Like, that's what it's like when a quarterback can fit the ball into tight windows and make beautiful throws and just completely take over a game. He was so good. And I don't know how you stop the Saints offense because, like you were saying, if you sell out to stop the run, Brees is going to beat you. And they're about to play a phenomenal defense. And, you know, we can talk about that. But they are so good. I mean, and so diverse and so difficult, I think, to counter.
Right. It felt like there was always an answer for the Panthers in this game. If they would blitz, there'd be a screen called. And if it was them stop the run, Brees would get away, and then there'd be a wide open receiver downfield. Like, there's that moment when I watch certain teams where the moment their quarterback looks up and the camera starts panning, I'm like, oh no, this is not going to go well for this team. Like, you know, it's like Blake Bortles does it, it's like, okay, the pass is probably going 3 yards out of bounds. But when Drew Brees does that, it's like, oh no, somebody is wide open and there's about to be a touchdown. Like, you just assume it is going to work out for Drew Brees. And so it felt like that in this game. By the way, I did confirm Ted Ginn, zero drops this year on passes 16 yards or more, which the NFL defines as deep throws. Although I will say, I think more impressive, DeAndre Hopkins, one drop on 59 targets. 16 yards.
Given some of the targets he was getting, right. That's insane. That is
exactly.
Insane.
So, I mean, it was a really throwback performance from Drew Brees, and I don't think it was an especially poor performance from Cam Newton either, who had a couple drops really early on, including that Kalen Clay touchdown drop, really carried the Panthers back in this game. And granted, you know, Christian McCaffrey did most of the work in that 56-yard touchdown, but in a game where he, at least depending on who you ask, which we will see, either had something in his eye or was possibly concussed by a big hit late on.
Yeah, he was good. He was great, honestly, especially compared to the last 2 weeks. Part of the reason I was so confident in the Saints heading into this was I just didn't believe in Cam Newton anymore. It has nothing to do with him letting the Seattle, although actually I'm kind of glad they lost, because if he had won and the Seattle had lost their final game, that would have been much more heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. But he was really bad those two final games.
Yeah.
So inaccurate. And Cam Newton is... I have trouble now with him. Just the lack of consistency, and then he'll do a game like this, and like the Kalen Clay pass that he missed was just beautiful. I mean, you don't get a more perfect pass like that in the NFL. So if you had told me that the Panthers would lose this game and that Cam Newton would play as well as he did, I don't think I would have anticipated it, even given how good the Saints offense is. I don't know what to think about this Panthers team moving forward in some ways, Bill, because...
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. The defense, I think, is good enough. Kevon Short in particular was really great. But that offense... there was a lot of talk about the lack of weapons around Newton, and I think McCaffrey... I don't want to say he's been a disappointment, because that's unfair, but the contrast between him and Alvin Kamara is pretty unfavorable.
Yeah.
I think. So, well, the contrast between Alvin Kamara and anyone is unfavorable. But I don't know. I don't really know what it's going to take for this team to get to the next level.
Well, one thing you might be worried about if you're a Panthers fan when it comes to 2018, Mina, do you know what their record was in games decided by one touchdown or less this year?
No.
It was 7-1.
Oh, well, yeah, that's bad.
There's a lot of close wins for the Panthers. And granted,
yeah,
you know, the infrastructure's there. They have a great quarterback. The defense is still going to be great. A lot of those players are coming back. Their secondary should still improve. There are plenty of reasons to be hopeful about this team. And I think it's fair to say that they could, mm-hmm. you know, go out and improve this offseason. But I would be concerned given that they're going to be for sale this offseason. We know that they're going to be in a point of transition. And even if they're... You know, the Ron Rivera is sticking around. Cam Newton is not going anywhere. Even if their core is still going to be there, are they going to be a team that's going to go out and spend, you know, a bunch of money in free agency to try and get a, you know, to bring in a new core of players? I don't know if Marty Herney is going to be allowed to do that. I don't know that Marty Herney is a good person to spend that money, if I'm being honest with you. But yeah. I don't know that they're going to be a team that's going to be actively trying to improve as opposed to just being in limbo until they're sold. So they could be in a really difficult spot heading into 2018. Let me ask you about two of the more controversial moments in this game. In terms of the Saints, when they went for it on 4th-and-2 at the 2-minute warning, was that a move that you agreed with?
Boy, no, but like 53-47, you okay. know what I mean? Is that I didn't see what our bot or our who does it, Brian Burke? Should we go for it or not? I don't know if it was right or wrong. My feeling it was real close, especially given that they had to score a touchdown, right? So it's not like this insane field position issue.
Right.
As if they were down by a field goal. But I didn't really mind it. Obviously, the interception was lucky in some ways. I have trouble blaming the class thinking about that afterwards, because as soon as he did it, I was, no, right? As soon as he held on to it. Also, it wasn't a catch, so
no,
I love that.
We
just slid over that. Like, that was the least catch of the entire season, and we just completely alighted. But anyway, setting that aside, I have trouble also blaming the cornerback, because, like, all you think about is intercepting balls.
Yes.
And your body is just so trained to do that. And there's the possibility that you can run it back, right? Not just
of course.
Intercept it. So I wasn't angry at him, even though I think the Saints lucked out a little bit. What did you think?
I was for it. You know me. I want teams to try and win the game. You got Drew Brees. Yeah. He's been incredible all game. And you're telling him, hey, if you get 2 yards, we win. Like, I'm fine with that. I can't. The Brian Burke's model said it was the Saints probably should have punted, but that's not adjusted for team. So I do think that the Saints, that's going to help with Drew Brees, given how effective he typically is and how effective they were in this game. But I mean, I just, if they punt, they're going to punt and give up and move the ball back to what? The Carolina 15, the 10, I'll say the 10 yard line. They're going to give up those 40 yards in two plays. Like, they're not going to be concerned about stopping Carolina 90 yards away from the end zone. They're going to want to avoid giving up big plays. They're going to play very soft coverage. That's what every team in the league is going to do in that situation, especially that they were up five. They weren't up three. They don't need to worry about giving up yardage for a field goal. And we saw the next two plays after Carolina took over, the next three plays, 19-yard completion of active midfield, a 21-yard completion to Kalen Play two plays later, got them to the New Orleans 26, at which point Cam Newton threw five incomplete passes and was sacked to end the game. So, you know, I really don't feel like the yardage in that situation really matters all that much. The field position just isn't as important as it would be if they were up three. I would say punt, no questions asked, because that yardage is going to make a significant difference. But here, I don't think it made that much of a difference to me.
That's fair.
I'm not angry about it. Like, I don't think it was like an obvious, like, oh, they have to go for it. You're an idiot if you don't go for it. And it wasn't an obvious, like, oh, they should have punted and you were a moron if they didn't punt. Like, it's just, it was okay. It's fine. You don't have to have a strong opinion on it. You could just have a mild opinion.
But the opportunity to win the game versus the percent that you give up in those 40 yards or whatever, I think that's a reasonable calculation. And it is Sean Payton.
Wow, this is really not first take.
I'm trying to think what's like a super first take thing I could say about the Saints? It's all positive. So
they don't trust their defense.
Marshawn Lattimore might be the best cornerback in the NFL right now. Ooh. How's that? I think I just said that about Jalen Ramsey.
That's the thing.
He's
so good.
He's so good, man.
It does seem weird that you know, colleges apparently can't produce players, and yet we have two top five cornerbacks coming out of college football in consecutive years. That seems strange.
I wonder if that's gonna. I don't know, just the amount of cornerbacks who have been successful right off the bat, if that's going to affect the draft next season.
It'll be interesting, because it's not just those two. It's also the Bills guy.
The safeties, too, by the way, have been really good. Marcus Williams and New Orleans, and then the Jets safeties.
Jamal Adams, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of really good secondary rookies. The Saints defense.
Tre'Davious White.
Tre'Davious White, yeah, right. It's fantastic. What year is Ken Crawley, by the way?
Crawley is a UFA from, I want to say 2016. Wow. Yeah, 2016.
24. Wow. That's crazy. He went to Colorado. And I think we're going to see him targeted a lot next week.
Yes.
But the Saints defense, after some of the injuries they suffered, I wasn't too concerned just because Vaccaro and Klein, I didn't think were, you know, that fantastic or whatever.
Right.
But there's definitely ways to beat them. Their linebackers are not great.
No.
Von Bell's not great. So I don't think I certainly don't think they're one of the best defenses left in the playoffs. I think the level of improvement maybe has given them more hype than they deserve. But the combination of Cam Jordan and Lattimore, just to have those two types of playmakers, I think is pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, you have two franchise players on defense, and then, you know, a reasonable core of talent around them. But yeah, definitely losing A.J. Klein doesn't sound like a big deal, but when you're replacing him with Craig Robertson and Manti Te'o, we saw what happened on that Christian McCaffrey touchdown where he just ran right past Craig Robertson, and then it was just a foot race to the end zone. The other play I wanted to ask you about did involve Fonville very slightly. On that bomb from Cam to Devin Funchess on 3rd and 23, do you think Devin Funchess was not giving his full effort on that play?
I don't know about effort. I think it was his fault, for sure. It might have just been he struggled to track the ball or, you know, just didn't position his body correctly.
Yeah.
But it was a perfectly catchable ball, I think. Cam Newton was, man, he was really good in this game. I keep saying that with, such an incredulous voice, but that is the voice of someone who watched him through gritted teeth the previous week and saw how awful he was and did not expect this kind of performance at him all. But yeah, I would say, I don't know if it was an effort thing, but he could have caught it.
It did seem like maybe he was just running a route and maybe couldn't jump backwards to the ball and got hurt and was injured and maybe didn't have his full faculties. Like, it does seem more plausible to me than just, I'm not going to try and catch this game-winning touchdown. Not for me. Maybe someone else should try this. Like, that seems pretty implausible.
Yeah, I always felt like, even with, you remember the famous Cam not jumping on the fumble or whatever from, you know, I always felt, I defended him a lot after that, because it's really hard how to know to angle your body when crazy stuff's happening in football. And I think we assume that it's so easy to do the right thing, right, with your physicality, and it's not always easy. And to attribute that to effort, I think, is pretty unfair in a lot of cases. But their receivers are just, you know, they're not good. I don't know what to say. I mean, Funchess is fine, but he needs more.
Yeah, it does seem like that is the obvious place for them to target this offseason, is going after a wide receiver, either in free agency, which seems like, I said, it's going to be a question mark, or going for one in the draft. But, do you want to give your picks for the divisional round before you finish up? Are you prepared to make those selections? I know that you're going to go into your tank and research for the rest of the week, but I want to ask just off the top of your head in advance.
All right, so Pats, obviously. Okay. I'm taking the Steelers over the Jaguars. You with me on those?
Sure. This is your bulletin board material, though, not mine.
Why is it? Why can't you have to make picks, too? If I'm going to make picks, you got to make picks.
You're the first take personality here. I'm not. I'm the person researching in an apartment that hasn't had heat in 3 days. That's me. That's my side.
I said on the first take, I said that the Rams would beat the Falcons, and the Rams are very good. And some guy tweeted at me today, "Can't believe you said Jared Goff was better than Drew Brees, idiot." I'm like, I definitely, like, what?
You saw what happened to Dominique. Anyway. I don't want any part of that.
Okay, so those are the easy ones. As far as the other side of the ball. So Saints-Vikings I'm taking the Falcons over the Eagles. Maybe that's I don't know what the line is. 2.5, 3?
Falcons
probably,
are favored by 2.5, I believe.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Falcons. I do not believe in Nick Foles. And I do think the Eagles defense, while excellent, has shown a few weaknesses over the last. We didn't really get into that, but Saints-Vikings is the hardest one for me, and I'm going to change my mind about this a million times. Right now I'm going with the Saints because I think that the Vikings offense has struggled a little bit over the last. Case Keenum in particular, I've noticed some issues over the last few weeks, and I think that he's not headed in the right direction statistically. So I think that he's going to have some trouble in this game.
Here's what I want to happen for that game. Just for Vikings fans' sake, I don't want it to come down to a field goal. If they're going to lose by like a touchdown and just lose outright and be sad about it, but please do not have this game come down to Kai Forbath.
I cannot remember the last time I watched an NFL game where a field goal over 40 yards was made and didn't whisper with so much bitterness in my voice, "Must be nice." Must be nice, Matt Bryant. Must be nice.
Frustrating season in some places, but we have a lot more football to get to before we can think about the kicker carousel for 2018.
Bring me on to talk about the kicker here, so I'm happy to talk about it.
We will have you back on to talk about kickers at some point in the future, Mina Kimes, but until then, where can people check out more of your work?
I'm on Twitter at Mina Kimes. I'm on Around the Horn tomorrow, Tuesday. This comes out Monday, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it's same day. Okay, so on Tuesday, I'm on Around the Horn. You can check me out there.
Awesome. Mina, thank you so much for hopping on the show today.
No problem.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode of the Bill Barnwell Show. In case you haven't guessed, this is the end of the episode. We're finishing up. There's no more content after this, except, and this, I'm just telling you this for the people who thought they could tune out. Just wanted to let you know, I am wrapping up on the nickel package for this season. So no more nickel package in midweek with me. Of course, keep checking out the show. I think Mina and Dominique are hosting the Wednesday episodes now, so you can listen to them there. I will be hopping on later this week with a couple guests to preview the divisional round of the playoffs on my own show, this very show that you're listening to. So check that one out. And thanks so much for listening to today's episode.